This is Alan Miranda, CEO of Ossian Studios.
This is Luke Skull, lead designer with Ossian Studios, and you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Someone give me a tankard! This is going to get good!
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hi, I'm Jay, a.k.a. Navinka Naroda.
Hi, I'm Michelle, a.k.a. Liso.
And I'm Trey, a.k.a. Ashokan Zilo, back from Thailand.
Welcome to episode 45, part two of the Neverwinter Nights podcast. How's everyone been doing?
Part two?
Well, yeah,
this is like deja vu.
Yeah, you making a backup file? Yeah, I got one. Nope, it's gone.
Yeah, now that I'm actually recording tonight, nobody will lose it.
Okay.
Hey, in this episode, we have an incredible interview with who, Jay?
I don't know, Trey. Who is it?
Alan Miranda, CEO of Ossian Studios.
And Luke Skull, one of their lead developers, where we talked about Mysteries of Westgate, which is going to be releasing real soon.
So how many people know that it's pronounced Ossian instead of Ossian?
Three.
That's one of the things we learned.
Yep, that is what we learned. You know, us and our accurate pronunciation skills, we've learned this one correctly, I think.
Ossian is an awesome.
Yes, Ossian is awesome.
That's how we remember it now.
This week we also saw some interesting news as InfoGames' revenue report came out. Not so much interesting about the revenue, because it still shows that Atari lost a lot of money. In the report, they talk about a new expansion pack for Neverwinter Nights 2 for 2008. They don't really give any details about what it's going to be or what its title. It's just referred to as the Neverwinter Nights 2 Expansion Pack 2. So hopefully they'll start production on that, and we'll get to see it late 2008 or early 2009. So there's hope.
So is it late 2008 or 2009?
Well, it didn't say. It just says that it was going to try to release it in 2008, but you know how schedules go.
Yeah, the release I read said 2009.
Also this week, the Academy of Modding Excellence, AME, published an interview with Hall of Fame author Ariston, winner of the Best Role-Playing Module category for 2006 on the Vault.
And the RWS team, short for Robin's Workshop, released 5 new tile sets to the Neverwinter Nights 2 Vault.
I heard about that one on Rob McGinnis's Neverwinter Nights community update, where I heard about somebody else that was on there.
I know, dudes. I'm pulling up my RSS feed that I pull up every day, and right there in big bold letters, thanks to Rob McGinnis for mentioning us on the Neverwinter Nights community update.
Yes, very much so. So yeah, we had predominantly like in the first two lines of their update. So
did either of you notice that Rob responded to Trey's question?
Oh, did he?
Yes, he said maybe soon.
Ooh. He said this week's blog is dedicated to the fine folks over at Neverwinter Nights podcast. Apparently, Jay has been missing the community content side of things.
Which there could be double meanings in that, as in I'm just totally missing it. Or I'm missing it because it wasn't there last week.
I think you said something about the fact that you were missing it, literally missing it, not because you weren't putting it out there.
I know. Yeah, anyway.
He did reply. He replied. And he said, maybe soon. Maybe we're wearing him down.
I think he's teasing us.
Maybe he just thought we were going to go away, and then he's realizing that we're not.
Those dumb hicks won't go away.
So now some more exciting news. On April 15th, our famous tax day, Jason Roy, the winner of Obsidian 2007 Neverwinter Nights 2 Module Contest, announced his release date for his new module, Misery Stone. So go to his blog. He has some fantastic screenshots. And this is, and I did have the opportunity this evening to run around in his module. It's not completely developed yet, but I got to see a whole lot of it firsthand, and wow, this is going to be awesome.
So what's kind of the environment or the premises? Does it kind of give an overview of the module or the story?
It's based on Ravenloft. It's vampires and werewolves, and it is an amazing setting. It's kind of like where people get sent for, say they did something high criminal or anything like that. They get sent to this alternate plane, and it's most in vampires rule, and it's very interesting. And this, and the environment is just amazing. Very gruesome, creepy, scary.
Yeah, it sounds dark.
It's very dark, and I got scared. I got to run around about 4 or 5 different areas prior to us recording tonight, and wow, I can't wait to get back and look at some more.
Speaking of hot modules, did you guys notice that the Vault has set out its Module of the Year list?
Yes,
for
I did.
2007.
Yep, the 2007 Module of the Year for
both original Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2.
Yep,
it's
and
be tough.
How many of those guys have you noticed on those lists did you recognize?
Well, most of them.
For the original one, I noticed Andarian, Sanctum of the Archmage 2, the Miracle Worker Act 1. He's actually the only one I recognize. Oh, the D20 Modern team.
So I think the guys on that list ought to thank us for getting them there. No, of course
yeah,
not.
Right. It wasn't all their hard work.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with their hard work. No, there's a lot of good recognition there for some folks that worked really hard on some modules and put in some significant time there. So good job, everybody. And hopefully we'll get to see. Are they going to come up with who the top winners are, or is that the final list?
So
this is the list you vote on.
This is what you start voting on March 3rd.
Cool. So we hope to see some good winners out of that. I know there will, because you know, there's not a bad one on the list I can see.
What, there's lots of ones we recognize on Neverwinter Nights, too. There's Inoa 4, Ernie.
Yes. Both of his modules are on there.
Thomas Soto, which you're going to have an interview with coming up episode after next, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Adam Miller.
Zach Hallbrook, both of his are on there. Jason Roy. And several of the people that we had on the live roundtable are on here.
Yep. Zach Hallbrook's the birthday's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is on here from the roundtable?
Ernie Noah 4. Jason Roy was just in the, he was actually in the audience. He didn't participate. Wyron, Dark Avenger, he was in there. And I saw Rafe Valdrin for Sands of Solfiel. He was in there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So hopefully if we keep doing this podcast long enough, when we get to this module of the year, whatever year it is, we should hopefully know everybody on the list.
If we get really good at it, maybe we'll have interviewed everybody on the list.
I went through the list, and I've played all of them except for like 4 or 5, which I'm trying to get through now so that I can make an educated vote.
Okay. I have a question for you. Which is shorter, the list of modules that you have played or the list of modules you haven't played?
I don't know. I did finish a fantastic one.
That's okay, because that's one of the reasons we love you.
I did finish a fantastic module this morning, and I do believe they're even on the list. Yes, Storm Chaser by Fallout Boy. I absolutely loved it, and the cliffhanger just made me say, hurry up and release the next one. It was fantastic. I did finish that this morning. It was really good.
Cool. I wish I had your schedule.
Eventually, I'm going to start playing all the modules that we've ever mentioned in the podcast.
Yeah, good luck with that. Speaking of playing modules, let's find out a little bit of Mysteries of Westgate before it releases, so we'll at least know what we're getting into whenever it gets here.
All
Right, today we had got the opportunity to sit down with Alan Miranda, founder of OCN Studios, and Luke, a.k.a. Alexander, which you guys might know because he's got some Hall of Fame modules out there as well. Just a little bit of background, Alan is the producer, or was the producer of Baldur's Gate 2, Throne of Baal, and the associate producer of Neverwinter Nights. OCN Studios also had the opportunity to create Darkness Over Daggerford, which was originally intended to be released as part of the BioWare Premium module set. And now, they're back. They're preparing to release Mysteries of Westgate as an adventure pack for Neverwinter Nights 2. Before we dive into the Mysteries of Westgate, let's talk a little bit about the adventure pack and how that compares with what we are familiar with as the Premium Module Program.
Yeah, I was going to say, just what we're attempting with the Adventure Pack program is to go a level above what was being done at BioWare on the premium mods. We wanted to make bigger games, more complex games when it came to stories and design. And so, you know, our latest game, Mysteries of Westgate, is a 15-hour game. So that's the direction that we were heading, is to make larger, longer games.
Wow. Is the name from some like the adventure pack you would get as a D&D set? Is that some where the name comes from, or is it just something completely independent of that?
No, the actual name is
Go ahead. Go ahead, Luke.
We actually came up with the name Mysteries of Westgate. We wanted to kind of have the name of the setting in the actual adventure pack name. We thought the Mysteries of Westgate sounded cool, and it kind of reflects what the story is about, which is a kind of big mystery. Full of surprises, full of secrets for the player to unravel. It's not based upon an existing adventure, PNP adventure.
Right. Well, I noticed that reading some of the information that's out there that you've released so far on Westgate, I'm also a big Pirates of the Caribbean fan, and it made me really kind of think of Tortuga as the place in that area, because just about anything could happen. So what is that kind of the feel for Westgate? Is it, or can you give us a little bit of background about what's going on inside Westgate?
I think Tortuga was a bit lawless,
right,
to some extent. Westgate's more organized. You know, they do have, a militia that keeps in charge of stuff in the city. It's not lawless in that way. It's just that anything goes in this city because it's really centered around money. You can get whatever you want as long as you can pay for it.
Ah.
Absolutely. I think it's probably one of the most cosmopolitan places in the whole of the Forgotten Realms. So, you can have anything and everything goes, providing you have the coin to pay for it, which, from our point of view, makes, for a really, really exciting role-playing adventure. Because players can really role-play their alignments. It doesn't matter what alignment, what race, what class they've chosen. There's really is something for everyone in Westgate.
Yeah. That's what's good about it, is that very accepting place. Like Luke said, all races are accepted. You can be from the Underdark, they don't care, as long as you got the gold.
So are there going to be any unique creatures or new content that's being introduced with this game? With the BioWare premium modules, usually were how we got upgraded to have new critters and new mobs. So I was just curious if there were any new ones included in this game.
Yeah, there are. We have four new creatures, actually. Two of which are ones that we've announced previously, and those are the only two we can talk about at this point. One is a were-rat creature, which was in Neverwinter 1, but it wasn't in Neverwinter 2. And that's central to our story. And we also have a Quelzarn creature, and if you've seen the screenshots, it's a giant sea serpent that comes out of the water. And you have a lot of these lurking around the harbor and the waters there, as well as in the sewers below the city. I think the history on the Quelzarn is that they had some kind of magical background that's the myth, that they were created by some wizard somewhere.
Yeah, possibly there's some kind of mutation that escaped into the sewers and made their way into the harbor. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're pretty dangerous, and there's stories you hear about Westgate of, sailors walking on decks of, the ship and the docks, and the Quelzarn is coming along and having them for lunch. So, we use them in ways that, they are dangerous. You kind of do have to watch out for them.
It sounds like that would create a unique dungeon crawl experience.
Well, possibly.
It'd be a very watery dungeon.
On acid.
Yeah, they are really large.
That sounds like it.
And by large, I mean really large. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, I remember watching, I think you had a video on that came out not too long ago that showed the Quelzarn attacking a ship. And
Yeah, that's right. That was it. And, it's quite a beast.
Yeah, just that actual scene is one of my favorite in the entire adventure pack, I think. It's an absolutely terrific part of the story.
Yeah, it was cool actually to take the game out of the city and into the waters, just outside the city, on the Dragon Coast. And it was neat getting the ships, because the ships aren't walkable actually in Neverwinter 2, at least as they were released. We made them walkable so we could have a bunch of stuff happening on there. So I agree with Luke. That was a cool sequence of going out there and facing off with the Quelzarn. In addition to those four new creatures, two of which will be a surprise later when people actually play the game, we have new things, new additional content, like a new sewer tile set, which we realized after choosing Westgate that there was no sewer tile set in Neverwinter 2. I think we were sort of stuck in the mindset of Neverwinter 1 that, oh yeah, there's a sewer tile set. And no, wait, there's not. We're going to have to make one. And so that was a bit of a learning experience for us because we hadn't made a new tile set in Neverwinter 2 yet. But I think we did a pretty good job. We have circular tunnels for sewers as well as open areas and bridge areas and pits. So it's a very versatile tile set. So we use that a lot below Westgate. And with additional content aside from that, we have new music and new VO as well.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the key differences between an adventure pack and a premium module is the kind of production values. I mean, we're packing an awful lot of VO, an awful lot of new music in there, and generally a much higher level of polish than any of the Neverwinter 1 premium modules. I mean, I played all of them, actually worked on my own cancelled premium module, I think it's fair to say that Mysteries of Westgate is a cut above those. It's far more akin to an expansion campaign in terms of production value and quantity, and I think players are going to appreciate that, when they finally get their hands on the product.
Would this pack appeal to all players, or really only those who have played through the OC or the Mask of the Betrayer? Or is your plan to bring in lots of new players with this?
Go ahead, Luke.
I think Mysteries of Westgate definitely has a kind of different flavor to the kind of Neverwinter 2 official campaign and Mask of Betrayer. It kind of has a more kind of Baldur's Gate feel. There's lots of exploration. I think the kind of the Neverwinter 2 OC was quite linear, as was Mask of Betrayer, whereas Mysteries of Westgate's all about, kind of exploring the city and all these dozens of independent adventures taking place at any one time throughout the city. So I think maybe players that didn't feel that perhaps the Neverwinter 2 OC was for them, I think Mysteries of Westgate might actually appeal to this and perhaps bring in players who haven't had a great time thus far with kind of Neverwinter 2. I can kind of see it appealing to Baldur's Gate fans, Neverwinter 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2 fans, and basically, all RPG fans. I think it has something in there for everyone.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very non-linear game.
Absolutely.
In what you can do, and a lot of, there were lots of thoughts at the beginning of the project as to what was a good comparison as to other games out there. Obviously, Baldur's Gate 2 and Athkatla and the city was one of them in terms of, you have city areas and you need to fill up with a sufficient amount of side quests. So that was an inspiration in some way.
I think it's also important to add that I think Mysteries of Westgate, in particular, I think hardcore role-playing fans who really love kind of replayability and choice and consequence, I think they're going to have a great time with Westgate, because I really made it focus, to have lots of replayability and have lots of choices that will really affect the outcome. So the player isn't just going from A to B, but they're kind of deciding how the story is going to unravel as they play. But from a personal point of view, I think choice and consequence are really important in an RPG game. It's not always the focus of kind of modern RPGs, but we've certainly kind of gone old school with Westgate, while also kind of keeping a really strong story, and really great production values in there. So yeah, I mean, I think it's going to appeal to everyone. That's my hope, at least.
Well, it sounds a phenomenal start. What I'm thinking of is I'm hearing you describe how you can explore the areas and there's lots of side quests that it makes me wonder if is this module primarily focused at a single player with companions, or is it got a facet of multiplayer play to it, or did you take that into consideration when developing this module?
We decided from the start that we were going to focus on single player. One of the things that we learned, both Luke and myself through Ossian in doing premium mods for BioWare, was that when you do a multiplayer mod, it's significantly more difficult when it comes to QA. There's a lot of resources that have to be thrown in. And, you know, this was our first Neverwinter 2 game. We really wanted to focus on making it as best as possible, without, you know, adding complicating factors that would make things very difficult for us. So we focused on doing a solid single player game. And that was the design goal from the start.
I was going to ask, during the development or production of Mysteries of Westgate, what were your favorite moments? Was there a favorite part of the game or a favorite part of the development that you would like to talk about? Without giving too much away, of course.
Did you want to go first, Alan, then I'll add mine after?
Sure. I think there's a couple of spots. One is where during the course of the core story, the players offered a very significant choice as to which path they want to go. And like Luke said earlier, you know, choice and role-playing are really our focus here. We want to make a good role-playing game. And so this is one of the best choices I've seen in a role-playing game. And I can't say what it is because it ruins the story, but there's a significant choice, you know, approaching towards the end of the story that is fantastic. Other than that, my other personal favorite is one of the side quests that I had written because I was inspired by something from Baldur's Gate. And let's just say it has to do with a little rodent.
Okay. That's a great question.
Companion.
I'll give you a clue. It isn't a kobold.
Yeah, it's not a kobold. Something small and furry, and it might fit in the palm of your hand.
Okay. Another mystery in Westgate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's full of them. Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite part of the game is probably the quivering Sir Marina, which I had a really great time designing. Essentially, I saw lots of maybe complaints from players that you know, RPGs aren't challenging enough, they're too easy. So I really wanted to create the kind of ultimate challenge for really, really hardcore players. To try and kind of overcome and conquer. So you kind of have the quivering submarina, and the player kind of starts off there and you kind of have you have kind of different combats that get progressively harder.
Which, if you guys don't know, is the gladiatorial arena.
Yes. And it's just great fun. I mean, I think Kevin, our technical lead, mentioned that he had a great deal of fun attempting to win all the fights, and I did too. In fact, I had a great deal of difficulty, which is a bit of a concern considering that I actually designed them. I couldn't actually beat them, but yeah, I mean, I think players are going to have a great fun attempting to win all of the fights there. It's just a really cool landmark within the city. I think players are going to have real fun with. There's also a few Easter eggs in there too.
So you're kind of hitting everybody a little bit hard right up front. You're saying you wanted to make sure that people felt challenged enough. Sounds like you've accomplished that.
Well, I think because players who are going to play Westgate, they've probably already gone through the OC. They've probably already gone through Mask of the Terranea. They're going to be fairly experienced. So there's no point setting the challenge level below the OC. And the expansion, because players are going to find it too easy, right? So we kind of made a choice to raise the challenge level a bit, to kind of have a fairly challenging critical path and some truly difficult optional fights in there along the way, which for me, I mean, I always have a great deal of fun kind of taxing myself. I kind of recall Baldur's Gate 2, and you had the Demi-Lich. Don't know if you guys played Baldur's Gate 2, but I think it's
been a long time.
Yeah, I think it's Kangax, the Demi-Lich.
Yeah, that's it.
Beneath Athkatla. Yeah, yeah. And just stuff like that really stands out for me as being kind of really memorable moments, in the kind of RPGs that I've played. I guess I wanted to provide something similar for players. So maybe in 10 years' time, players would be sat around talking about, did you recall that really, really tough fight in the Quivering Thumb Arena? Oh, yeah, that one was a real bitch.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of something I wanted to add.
Go ahead. You know, I was going to say is that, you know, with, and Luke has made this point before in other interviews, that, you know, we are actually having players use their companions more than, say, other Neverwinter Nights games. Like, Neverwinter Nights 1, you had henchmen that sort of trailed around behind you, and you could give them commands. But it wasn't like the old Baldur's Gate games, where you actually controlled your party members. And here,
we
went back to that, and in controlling them, you know, companions directly, when Luke says he made things more challenging, is that you have to take advantage of your companions and their strength, just like you did in Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I think that was a really, that was one of our main design decisions, was to make the player, have to focus on using their companions correctly. You know, they're not going to just be able to wade through each and every combat with their player character alone. They're going to have to use the companions and all the skills they have available. Just like Baldur's Gate 2, in fact.
They can still go ahead solo if they want, right?
I mean, they can do that. It's going to be incredibly challenging. I mean, perhaps the real hardcore out there might want to attempt that after they've beaten the game the first time. I mean, I think there's a far greater degree of kind of tactical complexity in Westgate, perhaps, than you'd find in previous Neverwinter Night experiences.
I know that a lot of the Neverwinter Nights players and Neverwinter Nights 2 players have a fond place in their heart for all the Baldur's Gate series, so I'm sure they will love getting some feel for that again.
We hope so.
Yeah.
It's already wanting me to go, like, okay, so when are we going to get our hands on this thing?
Well, I mean, all we can tell you at this point is soon. I mean, we've been done for a while. We were pretty much finishing it off back in September, so it's been waiting. And, you know, there's been some things to sort through when it comes to the technical aspects of the distribution with Atari, and especially Obsidian, because Obsidian's in charge of the code for Neverwinter 2, and so they have to make changes to the code. So they're doing that now. So all we can say at this point is that it will be soon, and we hope in Ossian that it's as soon as possible so that you guys can play it.
So we hear that it's only going to be available in digital download. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's going to be, I guess, similar in the way that the premium mods were at BioWare, where you downloaded them. It's going to be the same with the adventure pack, in that you download it as well. That's the distribution method that we're going for.
Cool.
When we were setting up for this interview, one of the things that was brought to light that you guys wanted to talk about was just the development of the module, maybe some of the process and stuff behind there. So having that huge background on the Neverwinter Nights tool set for Daggerford, what did you guys think of the Neverwinter Nights 2 tool set, and were there any particular challenges that were difficult to get over?
You want to take this one, Luke?
I thought it had its advantages and its disadvantages compared to Neverwinter 1's. I think there's definitely a much higher learning curve there. But I think it's a lot more powerful when you've finally got to grips with it. I haven't delved into the area design aspects of the tool set too much. But I definitely find the conversation and blueprint editor, much easier to use, than it was with the Neverwinter 1 tool set. You know, it's far more streamlined. Just to load it up and to write a conversation, it's much more streamlined. It's far easier to go back and edit. But like I said, there is quite a big learning curve there. I don't think that all the Neverwinter 1 modders have managed to make the transition.
No, I'm sure a lot of Neverwinter 1 modders looked at doing stuff in Neverwinter 2 and found that, in addition to the learning curve, it was going to take a long time to make something similar than what they had done in Neverwinter 1, especially when it came to making areas. So I personally think the Neverwinter 2 offset is definitely more powerful, but it is more complex, and it takes more time to learn. We also ran into a number of issues weren't working for us, such as that were working in Neverwinter 1. And we're like, they don't work here? Like, for instance, we put our voice sets in a hack, and that was a bug, and it didn't work. You know, you couldn't hear the voice sets for quite a little while during Westgate development. So there was stuff that Obsidian had to fix over the course of their development with Mask of the Betrayer and our development of Mysteries of Westgate. We stayed in contact with them about that, because that's sort of the nature of our relationship with the students, that they're there for technical support. That's the extent of that relationship. And so we would tell them the bugs we were finding, and they would send us, you know, fixed executables to test it out. But so we were finding these surprises all along the way during our development of what's
right.
happening here. It doesn't work. Oh, well, we ask Obsidian, no, it is broken. Okay, wait for a fix. But I think it's gotten now at the end of Mysteries of Westgate, like during our development in the last few months, things have firmed up. I think the skill sets improved, with the release of Mask of the Betrayer and the patches. And modders should have an easier time with, you know, doing stuff that we were trying to do.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the skill set's better now than it was on the OC's release, for sure.
I think it's fair to say that it's finally beginning to mature as a kind of development environment. And I kind of hope this heralds, a flood of new modules, as modders begin to realize that, it's actually a pretty cool tool to use, and it's, once all the bugs have been cleared up, as they're well on their way to being cleared up now, and the improvements made in the expansion and stuff are added in, I'm kind of looking forward to the new wave of modules, hopefully, that should arrive, particularly from new modders maybe attracted to the game by Mask of the Betrayer. I've actually noticed quite a few big-name modders coming to that they're about to move over to Neverwinter 2 from Neverwinter 1. I think you've had a gentleman on in the past, Tony, or Anthony.
Tony Donadario?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. I'm pretty sure I saw him mentioning that he was about to move over to Neverwinter 2. Yeah, and I think the kind of shift from Neverwinter 1 to 2 by modders such as him, that's definitely going to improve the quantity of modules available for players, and it kind of only help to grow the game. That's definitely bright things to look forward to with Neverwinter Nights 2, I believe.
Well, I think that's what you've hit the nail on the head there. That's one of the things that has seemed to have slowed the release of modules for Neverwinter Nights 2 has been some of the complexity in the Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset.
Yeah,
and it's not necessarily the complexity. It's just I write software for a living too, and I know that powerful software doesn't come with simplicity. You've got to learn how to make it do what you want it to do. So it is a different way of approaching module development from Neverwinter Nights 1's tool set, although there are some similarities. But I think it's a great tool, especially with the release of the Granny plugin to fill in a void there so that content stuff can be created for it now, because that was something Neverwinter Nights 1 had going for it in a huge way, was all the custom community-created content for it. So we should see a lot more of that here soon, and I'm sure the release of your module will just spur that on even more.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of our hopes, is that custom content creators will kind of learn from what we've done in Mysteries of Westgate, and we'll actually see a lot more custom art content being introduced, because I think up till now it's been more of a trickle than a flood.
Right.
We actually plan on releasing some of our content for free to the community.
Oh, very
so
cool.
That's the plan. We're looking at creatures, we're looking at a sewer tile set, we're looking at music, potentially some of the VO. So we want to contribute to the community in the same way that BioWare did. When they would, they'd put out a premium mod and they'd either release some of the content at a later point in a patch or as a hack. That's what we've been talking about with Atari.
Well, very cool. I just had a thought here as y'all were talking about all of the fixes you had to work with them to get going on. Will the release of Mysteries of Westgate be dependent upon a certain patch level?
Yeah, it will have to be, because, like I said before, that Obsidian's in charge of the code side changes in Neverwinter 2, and so when you're dealing with distribution, which, the premium mods were encrypted in some way, the game has to read that kind of encryption. So that can only be distributed to fans via a patch. So it's only after a patch is out with those additions to the code can we release Westgate.
Okay. Another patch 1.12 is getting ready to roll out the doors hopefully someday soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, building a module that goes for 15 hours of playtime, I'm just curious, what's the size of your development team?
Well, for Westgate, we had 14 internal people and 5 external people. And so when I mean internal, it's that those are the people that were focused on making the game and knew all about the game and were involved in that development. The external people, you know, these are people that we contract to, you know, maybe make a creature or Dave John to write music. They weren't involved in development per se. We just sort of told them what we needed. So 14 and 5. So in total, there were 19 people. And that does require some definite coordination. But in, you know, if I compare it to what we did on Daggerford, it was much a better setup this time around on Westgate, especially with how the tool set was set up. Because back on Neverwinter 1, you had to save everything in one mod file, and you had to bring in earths from the different designers, and these things would overlap, and files would conflict, and it was pain. with Neverwinter 2, you know, we use similar source control that we did in Neverwinter 1, but it's integrated in the tool set. And so, you know, we use SVN, and we have a plugin for it. And so if a writer wants to work on a Convo file, then they just check out the Convo file and check it back in. There's none of this ERFs.
So you're working in the expanded directory mode?
Yeah, exactly. The module folder. Module files themselves are so susceptible to corruption. We stayed away from them from the very start. In fact, Obsidian used module folders, and that's what we use.
Yeah, I think that was a great advance for the tool set to be able to do that, because then it allows you, like you said, SVN, for those of you who don't know, Subversion, which is a version control system, as a great open source control system for any kind of software that you're trying to develop. So as a developer, I think that's pretty cool to see you guys using tools that I'm familiar with. And a team that I'm working with some to try to work on a module, I've been trying to get that set up. And Alan, I may have to talk to you later to get some tips on that.
Sure, I'll give you some tips. But that SVN was a really critical part to everyone being able to work together. Obviously, there's communication happening, and we're not like BioWare, the central company with one office and everyone in here. We're a virtual team. So we have team members, like Luke is in the UK, right? And we have other people in the US, Austria, Brazil, Australia, Canada. We're all over the place. And so obviously email is a method of communication. We also use Skype, and so we can clarify things via voice. So I think it is a bit of a challenge when you're doing things remotely, you know, between people across especially different time zones and, you know, staying up trying to answer questions. It'd be easier if we were all in just one office and, you know, walk down the hall and said, hey, you know, can we fix this problem over here or what's happening? So it does have challenges, but we've made it work. And even with, you know, 14 internal people working on the team, it worked pretty well.
Well, so I know that the release is coming up real soon, and I know this is not a question we had in our initial list, but what's in the future for you guys? You got something else you're working on? And
yeah, actually, we do. We are working on multiple things that, unfortunately, we can't talk about.
Yeah.
We'd like to.
I heard you mention David Johns earlier, so did he create all your music for you for this one, or was
for,
it
for Westgate?
He have a team?
No, it's just Dave John. He does it himself, and you know, we first met back when he was doing music for the premium mods at BioWare, mm-hmm. and so we started working together. And I mean, as you know, the premium mod program fell apart, and he had been contracted for one or two tracks for us through BioWare for Darkness Over Daggerford.
Yep. He also did 3 tracks for my Council Premium mod Tyrants of the Moonsea.
We both knew Dave. And Dave's a really good guy to work with. And when Daggerford, you know, we were going to release it just by itself, you know, he actually did more tracks for us. So we developed a pretty good relationship in the time that we've worked with him on Darkness Over Daggerford. He's actually improved as a composer. And when we were getting to Westgate, some of the stuff he was doing was
fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant.
The composers like him or Jeremy Soule, they use synth samples that are taken from real instruments, and you play it through a computer system, and so you play it through a keyboard. And you could tell from some of the stuff he did from Premium Mods to the stuff he did from Westgate, it sounded a lot more real. The instruments sounded a lot better. The composition was really pulling together. I know at some point soon, I think we're hoping to release the intro movie to Mysteries of Westgate, and so you actually hear his intro track, which was excellent. It's excellent. So he did the work for us, the music work for us for Mysteries of Westgate. He actually did 25 minutes of music instead of what we were initially talking about.
Yeah.
And, and he just wanted to pack all that he could in there to, you know, to have people hear his stuff. So that's one of the reasons what makes the Adventure Pack so great is that it has a lot of music. It has more music than what we did on Throwing a Ball back at BioWare. So we're really happy at it. And I'm hoping that people do notice Dave's music when they do play Westgate. It should stick out as some quality stuff. And we're going to continue working with him for our next projects, for sure.
Yeah, I've listened to some of his music and really impressed. So when y'all mentioned his name, I was curious. I've actually traded some emails with him in the past, trying to get him on as an to interview him as well.
Oh yeah,
I think he was just starting up with you guys. He at the time he couldn't tell me what it was, but he said he was fixing to start into a big creating a bunch of music for something that he couldn't tell me about. And I bet it was you guys.
Well, quite possibly,
it definitely was. You could probably talk to him now, and I'm sure you know he'll want to talk all about it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we'll have to recontact him because. Well, guys, thanks a lot for spending some time with us, and if it's at all possible, I would love to get you guys back on the show in a month or so after about a month or so after the module releases, so we can get some feedback on see how things are going.
No, that sounds great. It was a pleasure being here.
We had some pretty good feedback from the last show. And Skunkin, aka Skunk, he is going to looks like he's going to host some DM events over on Neverwinter Nights Connection for us.
Yeah, I actually
is that exclusively for us or just for people that were commenting? Because I know there were several comments about, hey, why don't you lead a couple sessions for us?
Right, and then I said, hey, I want to too, and I said, hey, why don't you go schedule them? Someone asked him, hey, why don't you host some events,
right?
And then he said, "Yeah, sure, I can do these times." And he listed out times and days. And then I replied and said, "Hey, I'm interested too. I want to play."
Very cool.
So I suggested, "Why don't you go over to Neverwinter Connection and just schedule them and see who shows up?"
Very cool. So you guys watch that for Neverwinter Connections. Skunkin is going to be hosting some sessions. If you listen to the last interview with him, it ought to be fun. I would have liked to have been in the one wherever he did the time flash where you had to not run into yourself. That would have been awesome. Yeah, he said there was in the interview there was one he talked about where you went either forward in time or backward in time and you couldn't see yourself or it would be catastrophic events.
Right. I remember that.
We also had some new posters, didn't we, that posted on the comments?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. We had... I'm going down the list here. Oh, Lord. Alvaresha? Oh, that was fun to butcher.
It's okay. They'll correct us.
Yeah, I'm sure. And there was one other one. Seagal 712. So, welcome, and thank you for commenting.
That's right. We've had lots of good comment activity on the last several episodes, so I really appreciate you guys commenting and keeping the conversation going long after the microphone goes dead. That's great.
Yeah, we had some record-breaking comments. I mean, I think 46 was in the last 46 comments in the last one. Like, wow.
I also wanted to let you guys know something that I just added today. If y'all are a fan of social networking or any form of like that, I've set up a Twitter account. And you can follow the Neverwinter Nights podcast on Twitter by going to twitter.com and searching for NWN podcast, all one word. And if you're into that kind of stuff, it's like blogging, except it's only 140 characters at a time. What's going to happen is we've set this and hooked it up to our website so that whenever we post new episodes, you'll see a message in your Twitter. So if you're monitoring that, you can see that. So it's just kind of one of those fun social things. If you guys want to hook up with that, that would be cool.
Does that mean they get to be Twitter-pated?
No, if they want to be. I think they're already Twitter pated with you.
I want to go get Twittered.
Twitter pated, you know, from Bambi.
I know.
Is it Tweeter or Twitter?
Twitter.
Twitter pated.
TWITTER.com.
I typed in Tweeter.
You're so silly.
Oh, two T's. I did two E's. You're a lot from my Arkansas learning.
So you guys want to... Next episode, we'll be having the excerpts from the Never Were Nice podcast live modules and development roundtable we had about a week ago, which was awesome. We had about 15 people show up, and even though we had a few technical glitches with Skype and Skypecast, we finally got it all kicked off, and thanks for everyone being patient until we worked those out. And there were still some minor problems with we didn't have as much control over who could talk and who couldn't talk as we wanted to, but everyone did a great job of policing themselves, and we had an awesome discussion. What you're going to hear is probably the first hour of it. I think it went on like another hour and a half after we turned the recorder off. So a great discussion on some modules that you can see on that list of 2007 Everywhere Nights 2 modules, and some cool stuff in the works coming out from those people in the discussion. So it'll be a great episode.
So what are we thinking about doing for our next live session?
I know we got a couple of ideas floating around. That we've got the opportunity to get a couple of BioWare community reps of Ion, so we could ask questions to those guys and have kind of a little more open question forum type deal.
A live interview?
Yeah, like a live interview. But then I think Michelle and Johnny might have some other ideas too. So,
well, I had an idea of the kind of the people in the background, you know, the writers, the scripters, builders and stuff that don't actually release modules, but are like the backbone of a lot of major projects that
the movie set builders.
Right.
Yeah. That would be cool.
I thought that would be really cool too. And they stick to, a lot of them stick to specific talents. And, well, it proves they're all really good at it. They release some wonderful stuff. And also thought about people who release custom content and tile sets, etc., to the community also for modders to use in their modules.
Well, I've got an idea. If
you're listening, your idea, Jay.
I'm about to sit back and be amazed.
All right.
We've had some great activity in the comments sections of our episodes. Let's utilize that. You guys out there, you've heard some of the things that Michelle and I've come up with. If you've got a good idea for a live event, which is one of those where you can invoice or text, ask a question directly to someone and it wind up being used in the show, what kind of topics would you guys like to be involved with? What kind of event or kind of discussion would you come be part of? So if you can just post some ideas in the comments, we'll work on getting them to happen.
I did have one more idea. And that is a live discussion with the people who commonly do reviews, or reviewers, live discussion.
So like live reviews?
Yeah.
We can throw some modules at them and they can tell us about them.
Yeah, exactly.
See if they stick to the wall.
Well, I just noticed some people that we've even had on here on the show are reviewers. Their name is all over the vault doing reviews to various modules, and I thought a reviewer's live show would be cool, too.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see what they look for in modules and stuff like that, so that'd be cool.
Okay.
All right, anyway. That's so, remember, next week, our next episode's going to be Never One Out's Podcast Live Module Development, and that after that will be Domi Soto with...
Bishop's Romance,
that's right. So until next time,
get in game.
And level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2008.
CN Studios was also had the opportunity to create back Darkness of Daggerforge. I haven't even got that in my notes wrong.
Oh, wait a second. Yeah, that's Darkness Over Daggerforge.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, that's over. OCN Studios also...
OCN Studios.
OCN.
Okay, and now the question you've all been waiting for. As the CEO of a gaming company, what kind of car do you drive?
I don't know. You might have ideas of what some CEOs might drive in their flashy sports cars, but not me. I drive something pretty respectable. I drive a Nissan Sentra. It's you know, it's reliable. It's got great reviews. It's affordable.
No Ferrari.
I don't need it. I just need to get from A to B and have a decent car to do it. That's all I care about.
Okay, well, that's a fun question we like to throw in every once in a while. This is me. Is that you?
This is me. Is that you?
This is me. Is that you?
Nope, this is me.
It's me. It's not you. It's me.
Hong Kong Bui, fresher than a naked eye.
God. And we have their external forum and the link to the vault both. It'll be on the show notes.
Now, I read about that on Rob McGinnis's number one night's community. Oh, hell, thing. Phone ringing.
Turn the ringer off.